Welcome to the DMSG Healthcare Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Hadley, founder and CEO of the Denver Medical Study Group. Our organization was founded back in November of 2008, and we're going into our 15th year now. We have over 1,300 members in 29 states, including Colorado. And starting this year, 2023, we will meet both on webinars and in person. So it's exciting to have the opportunity to get back in person and continue to do webinars since we have members that are in so many different parts of the country. Thank you for listening to our podcast. We're excited to share the stories of healthcare leaders across the country. Today, I've got two great healthcare leaders, and I'm excited to visit with Brian Wong, MD and CEO of the Bedside Trust, and Dr. Tommy Thomas, CEO of Opposite Strengths. I've had the pleasure to work with both of these professional healthcare leaders on trusted cultures for healthcare and healthcare culture transformation. Dr. Wong, thank you for joining me today. Would you tell our listeners a little about yourself and your background?
Good morning, Chris. Great to be with you and Tommy today. I'm a family physician. Practiced 10 years in family medicine in Seattle, Washington, which is where I still reside. I've been a physician executive for a number of years, and for the last 30 years, I've been consulting to healthcare organizations across the country. For the last 25 years or so, specializing in trusted cultures for healthcare organizations.
Dr. Thomas, thank you as well for joining me today. Would you share with our listeners a little about yourself and your background?
Thank you for having me, Doc Hadley. I appreciate this opportunity, Chris. I have been a licensed psychologist in Texas since 1983, so that's going on 40 years. I am not your typical psychologist because my specialty was in psychometrics and personality. And if I say that I'm a psychometrician, usually people say, "What is that?" And then I have to explain it's the combination of statistics and psychology. So, but what I've done, I started working with my dad, who is one of the first executive coaches in the country. He worked with the executives in helping them to better their relationships and understand themselves and help their companies grow. So I've been working with executives and organizations for the past 40 years. And in that career, I've worked with a number of healthcare systems, and I've come across very similar conditions to what Brian will describe as what he's been dealing with for the past 30 years. It's always gratifying to hear another voice in the wilderness talking about healthcare culture transformation and what's needed.
Tommy, what is the one thing that all great leaders have?
In my study of leadership, at one point I decided I wanted to really understand what leadership was, because I think it means practically something different to everybody who talks about leadership. So I read books by Warren Bennis and a number of other leadership experts. And the one common thread that was in everybody's point of view was to know themselves, was to understand who they were. So I would say the number one thing that is true about a good leader is that they know who they are. They understand why they behave the way that they do. They understand their strengths and opposite strengths terminology, their lead strengths and their supporting strengths. They also understand that leadership is a combination of themselves and other people. You cannot lead unless you have people that you are leading. So it's not a solitary kind of occupation. So knowing yourself is the number one foundational issue in leadership.
I've always wondered about that. I appreciate you sharing that. Brian, I've got a question for you. Much of your work is focused on what matters most to patients. Would you share what you're talking about here?
Sure. We're in the business of providing what matters most to patients. That's foundational to the work that I've done. We are in the business of providing what matters most to patients. And so if you believe that's true, then it's really important to know what matters most to patients. So what matters most to patients anyway? And when I've talked to audiences and I pose this question, the way that I frame it, in addition to the question itself, is don't think of patients as them, as other people, as nameless, faceless, anonymous masses that come through our doors and seek care. Think of patients as somebody you care about. And the person I like to use as an example is my mother, Roberta Wong. Mom is just about to be 93, still independent, still lives on her own in San Francisco, 1,000 miles away. I think about her all the time. And so when I ask an audience what matters most to patients, think of somebody you care about, like Roberta Wong. And at the point that she has developed some kind of health issue or health concern and is about to access the system, what do you think would be top of mind for somebody like her? And the responses that I get are surprisingly universal across the board. Help me feel safe. Listen to me. Be present and engaged. Compassion, caring, respect, competency, safe quality care. And what's interesting to me is that while safe quality care and competency are, of course, what matter most to patients, it's frequently not the first thing that is uttered, even by an audience of physicians or healthcare executives. And when you understand what matters most to patients, you understand that it's a combination of compassion and competency. And when you think about compassion, there are a number of behaviors, listening, presence, empathy, respect, that are resident within compassion. And another word for behavior is culture. And so I would say that what matters most to patients is the behaviors of the people taking care of them, and hence the culture of the organization.
You know, as I listen to the two of you, things come to mind that are really exciting. One was, Tommy, your perspective is focused on opposite strengths. So you work with leaders in healthcare systems to improve the relationships of the employees with the executive offices to stabilize, if you will, the employment situation. Brian, you're focused on patients, listening to patients. They'll give you the diagnosis, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And so what's the difference between what the two of you do? Go ahead, Tommy. Why don't you start off with that?
Okay. Well, I can tell you one of the differences between Brian and me is that Brian is an actual medical doctor who has actual experience being within the healthcare system. So when he speaks, he brings a lot of credibility just from the fact that he's been there and done that. I have a PhD, so I'm not the kind of doctor that can actually help you. So that's one of the big differences between us.
You mean to tell me that all this work that you've done with me is not going to help me in the opposite strengths?
I'm sorry, I don't do miracles, Chris.
Oh, but, okay.
So what I've found is that in working with healthcare systems, if you want to transform the culture, one of the true things about it is that you start at the top, because a lot of, Brian defined culture very well as the behaviors of the organization. A lot of times people in an organization look to the hierarchical top of the organization, the C-suite, the CEO, and they feel like behaviors that those people or that person is showing is sort of like the right way you're supposed to behave in this organization. And so you want to have a person at the top who is psychologically agile, who can show lots of different kind of behaviors. They can be self-confident, and they can be confident in other people. But if you start at the top and you really get a buy-in that there needs to be this culture transformation, or everybody agrees that culture is a really important part of the organization, then you can work down and you get a much better buy-in and I think a more significant hold in the culture.
You spent quite a bit of time working with one of our health systems here in Colorado a few years ago, Poudre Valley Health System, before they became part of UC Health, and worked with their CEO, Rulon Stacy. What were the dynamics he had to deal with, and how did opposite strengths help him?
When Rulon, and of course, Brian and you and I, we all three know Rulon, and we know how when you meet him, he's a very psychologically agile person. He can show lots of different characteristics, and yet he knows who he is. I mean, he really knows who he is, but he uses that as a foundation to be able to adapt to the environment and adapt to other people. So when he came into Poudre Valley in 1996, and I'll, you know, he should be telling his own story, but he entered a system that had a very high turnover rate. They had a lot of open positions that weren't getting filled. There were just a lot of very expensive things going on. And Rulon's not, he's the kind of guy that likes to do a really good job. So this was not a very satisfactory situation. So they began asking themselves among the C-suite, you know, why are so many people walking out the door? And they figured out that it was, basically it was the culture. And so they went about it was like a 10-year long project to do all of these things to change the culture. One of those things was bringing in opposite strengths, and so that we could help people understand themselves and understand that people different from you are not necessarily wrong. There are right ways to do things, and to move them from being a competitive environment to a collaborative environment. And of course, you need both of those things. You want to have people compete and to always do well, but you also want them to do it in a collaborative, collegial environment. And that's what Brian talks about, is that's the part that's missing from a lot of cultures. Lots of competition, but not much collegiality and not much reliance on other people. So, you know, Rulon, and they did a lot of other things besides opposite strengths, but just to show you how successful that was, they won the Malcolm Baldrige Award in 2008. And the Malcolm Baldrige Award is the National Quality Award. And there were only three organizations in 2008 that won it, and Poudre Valley was the only healthcare system. So, I mean, to me, that is just a testament to the value that they placed on the culture and doing the kind of things that Brian is talking about today.
Yeah, as I recall, they had a turnover rate that was a pretty high percentage, wasn't it, when Rulon started there?
My understanding, and I have a chart that he gave me that shows this, that when he started out, it was 23% was the voluntary turnover rate. And the average in healthcare systems was 19%, and the average in other industries was maybe 11 or 12%. They were like one of the worst and one of the worst industries for turnover. And they reduced that at one point to 4%, which was just kind of like unheard of. And they became this magnet that people wanted to work at, and they just created this environment and this culture that just attracted people that wanted to do a good job and were tired of toxic cultures, and they just flocked there.
I mumbled eight as Tommy was talking, because that's my recognition of what best practice is in other industries. So the 4% in healthcare is really phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. Brian, I'm going to switch to you for a minute here. Tommy and I were able to observe a presentation you gave to an organization here in Colorado recently, Mind Springs Clinic over in Grand Junction. Would you share a little bit about those dynamics at Mind Springs? What's going on there?
They're in tremendous turmoil. You know, one of the things frequently that you don't want to do is to be front and center in the press, be the target of the press, especially if it's for bad things. And they found themselves, I think a year ago, undergoing, audits by four different agencies, including CMS. And there was a threat that they would lose their licensure and lose their certification and have to shut down. the new CEO, John Sheehan, came into town. John was a past client of mine at Harbor Health, a network of behavioral health systems in Toledo, Ohio. And we implemented a trusted culture at Harbor. And when he arrived at Grand Junction, he called me and asked if I would be of service to him. I have started a process of introducing trusted culture trainings throughout his organization. He's got about 580 employees in a number of clinics, mental health centers across the, I think they call it the Western Slope, as well as one hospital in Grand Junction, West Springs Hospital, which is a mental health hospital that also has a mental health emergency room. My favorite quote about culture is that the culture of a company is the behavior of its leaders. Leaders get the behaviors they exhibit and tolerate, and you change the culture of a company by changing the behavior of its leaders. And I believe in that so much that my first session in teaching about trusted culture was with the executive team, with the C-suite, and my second session was with the board of trustees. And then after that, we began going session by session to reach the entire workforce, 20 or 30 at a time, conducted via Zoom, with the goal that after 20 or 30 sessions, we could reach 100% of the workforce.
How far along have you gotten with that at this point with MindSpring?
At this point, we've completed, I think, 21 of the sessions. We probably have 30 on the books altogether that go through the month of March. We started in the middle of October. And so it's been about a 6-month process to reach that number of people. Probably by the time of our webinar, early March, I'll have a baseline view of where they are and what I think is possible for that organization.
You bring up an interesting perspective that we often forget about as we start going back to in-person meetings. But both of you, when the pandemic hit, made some transition to virtual conferences rather than in-person meetings. What was that like for you?
There is a lot of value in when we do opposite strengths in having people in one place together with a live facilitator so that they can actually, there are a lot of things that you can do in a live in-group on-site experience that you can't do online. We did transform our seminar experience to be through Zoom, to have it virtual. It works okay, but I still think that having a group of people together at Poudre Valley, the typical size was 50 people at a time, and Rulon would show up usually, or some member of the C-suite would show up at every seminar and reinforce it, and that was really helpful to what happened. So I think you can. You and I witnessed Brian working with, I think it was MindSprings 3 or 4 weeks ago, and that worked really well. He had great audience participation. So I think it can work. I just prefer doing it on site, with people. There are certain things you can do that way that you can't do online, but you can still do it effectively online.
Yeah. I would agree with that. It's definitely doable. It may not be preferable, but given the kind of the times that we find ourselves in, Zoom has been a lifesaver in a lot of ways to be able to provide these kinds of service continuously, despite the pandemic, once people got out of shutdown mode.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question to you, Brian, is how has it worked for you? And sounds like it's been pretty effective. I know we have been on virtual conferences now since February of 2020, and this is January, almost February of 2023. So
right.
We've done our meetings virtually for 3 years and just went back to in-person meetings last week, and unbelievable the dynamic difference that occurs when you meet with people in person. Almost forgot to start the meeting because we were having so much fun visiting about
Yeah, I heard about that.
So, okay, Tommy, is there anything else that you'd like to share to close our your portion of our meeting today?
Well, I think I'll talk about how culture transformation works in organizations, at least from my perspective, in implementing opposite strengths as a common language that's used throughout the organization. Malcolm Gladwell wrote a really great book a few years ago called The Tipping Point. And he talked about how changes take place among organizations or groups of people. And what I have found, it takes about 13 to 20%. You have to get into, and about 13 to 20% of the people in an organization need to sort of buy into this process. And before that, you're sort of marketing it to them. You're kind of having to pull people along. And then, but after you get to that tipping point, everybody wants to be a part of it, and it sort of accelerates kind of on its own. So anybody who's trying to do a culture transformation on an organization, I would say don't be discouraged in the early days, because if you just keep it up and be consistent, it'll happen.
Just to give a real life example to what Tommy has said, with using MindSprings as that example, was in the very beginning, there was a lot of resistance to having mandatory training on culture. Yep. And at the same time, they were in the middle of four different compliance audits. And John said, this is, we have to learn about culture so that we can prevent these compliance audits. Once we got through session number 10 or 12, where we got to that 13 or 20%, it became almost self-perpetuating, where a buzz has now been created within the organization of people looking for times when they can be at a session.
Brian, that's exactly what happens. It's well said.
We saw that, didn't we, Tommy, in Brian's virtual presentation to MindSprings that we sat in on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I particularly like that when he asked Brian, when you asked the question of a group, what's the first thing that comes to your mind if you say, if you want things done right? And almost nobody says, if you want things done right, ask a team member to help. Nobody says that.
Nobody says that. Nobody says that.
Okay, well, I think we're doing a lot of things right here today, guys. Brian, do you have any last thing that you'd like to share with our listeners?
The last thing I'd like to share is something that you opened with. You said, listen to the patient. Where did that come from? That wisdom is 100 years old, over 100 years old, from Sir William Osler, known as the father of modern medicine. He said, listen to the patient. He's telling you the diagnosis. Now, I heard that in the first sentence of my first lecture on my first day as a first year medical student. That's how important it was in my own training and impact it had on me. And so listening has been so vitally central to me in what I've wanted to be as a physician. And sadly today, physicians have been reduced to units of production, cranking out visits. And so we've lost the art of listening and the ability to listen to each other. And related to listening to people is this idea of common things occur commonly. When you hear hoofbeats, think of horses as an adage in medicine. And we've become so focused on being unique. I think unique is weak. When you think of yourself as unique, it means somebody else's solution can't work for you because you're unique. I, on the other hand, a core tenet of my work in building trusted cultures is look for common ground, which is an active process of asking questions, seeing patterns of responses, looking for the common threads. And from those common threads, you can build a culture of what matters most to patients.
You know, we got to do this again, gentlemen. You having you two professionals on has been just fantastic today. One of the lines that I heard many years ago, some guy said, well, don't confuse me with the facts. I've made up my mind.
Correct.
And we got to have a whole different interview on that. But I thank both of you today for your time and your contributions to our interview, and wish you both the best as you move forward into 2023.
Thank you, Chris. This has been a pleasure.
Same here, yes. Chris. Thank you very much. Tommy, good to be with you.
All right. Good to see you, Brian.